Welcome to the deep dive. Look, if you're trying to get a handle on one of the most, frankly, stressful financial topics out there, the relentless rise of healthcare costs in the U.S., then you're definitely in the right place. Today, our mission is really to cut through all the noise, you know, the reports, the data flooding your inbox. We're going deep on the projected cost increases for 2026. We've synthesized insights from all of the major players, consultants, actuaries, think tanks to pinpoint what's really driving this spike. And, well, let's just get to the bottom line. It's not great news. Costs aren't just rising. They seem to be accelerating. Our sources are showing that for 2026, healthcare costs in the U.S., they're expected to jump somewhere between, say, 6.5% on the low end, up to well over 10% in quite a few market scenarios.
Yeah, that variation is definitely there, but the direction, it's universally up. When you pull together the different analyses, you see slightly different peaks. Mercer, for instance, they're calling for 6.5%, and they explicitly state that's the highest they've seen since 2010.
Well, since 2010.
And that's after factoring in cost-saving efforts employers are already making. So yeah. It's significant.
And then you've got the Business Group on Health, BGH. They're even higher forecasting 7.6%. PwC is looking at 8.5% for medical costs for the third year in a row. That kind of momentum is hard to ignore.
It really is. And it gets worse if you drill down. Look at specific markets. The Kaiser Family Foundation, KFF, their analysis, it showed the median proposed premium increase for small group insurers is hitting 11%.
11%. And for individual shopping on the marketplace, I saw some sources suggesting increases, what, like 15%, even 20% for some plans? That's just brutal pressure, whether you're running benefits for a big company or just trying to manage your own family's budget.
That pressure, it's really the result of a collision. The sources are clear. This isn't just one thing. It's like three massive forces hitting the system all at once. You've got incredible pharmaceutical innovation. You've got these unavoidable demographic shifts, and then just systemic pressures, inflation, labor costs.
The collision, right?
Yeah. And to really get why it's accelerating now, we have to start with the, well, the most dramatic driver everyone's talking about.
Okay, let's unpack this collision then. Starting with pharma. Looking through the sources, I mean, it jumps out. There's one category that seems to have just fundamentally changed the game for health plans recently. GLP-1 drugs.
Oh, it's a true phenomenon. Absolutely. These drugs, you know, they started out approved for type 2 diabetes, Mounjaro, Ozempic, Rybelsus, using ingredients like semaglutide or tirzepatide.
Right, for diabetes management initially.
Exactly. But now they're rapidly becoming primarily known and used for weight loss, either through the specifically approved drugs like Zepbound and Wegovy, or just massive off-label prescribing.
And that's where the costs get tricky, right?
Yeah.
Because these aren't cheap. We're talking about medications that, what, typically cost around $1,000 a month?
Roughly, yeah. But the real kicker isn't just the monthly price, it's the duration. The intent is for people to take them indefinitely, perpetually, to keep the weight off and maintain the health benefits.
Perpetually.
Okay, that is
that changes the whole equation. It's not like a course of antibiotics.
Precisely. And that perpetual cost, it creates this enormous headache for payers, for employers. Is this a medical necessity for a disease, obesity? Or is it more like a lifestyle drug? The whole debate over covering GLP-1s, it's become probably the single biggest flashpoint in benefits planning for 2026. The demand is just overwhelming.
And the numbers back that up. I saw a RAND report, 12% of Americans have already used them for weight loss, and another 14% are interested.
Yeah.
Prescriptions have more than tripled since 2020. This isn't some niche thing anymore.
Not at all. It's mass market demand hitting a specialty drug price point. And, you know, that demand curve, it's likely only going to steepen.
Yeah.
What's really interesting and potentially worrying from a cost perspective is their future potential.
How so?
They're in clinical trials right now for things completely separate from diabetes or weight loss. Think Alzheimer's, heart disease, sleep apnea. If those trials pan out, the pool of eligible patients for these very expensive chronic drugs could just explode by orders of magnitude.
Wow. That sounds less like a trend and more like
Yeah,
a fundamental shift in what high-cost care even means.
It really is. And the GLP-1 story, while it's the most visible, it's kind of the poster child for this larger shift towards what the industry calls specialty medications. These high-cost drugs are becoming the core driver of healthcare inflation. I mean, look at the pipeline. Experts are estimating nearly 80% of all FDA approvals in 2025. They're expected to be in this specialty category. It signals a huge strategic move towards really targeted complex therapies, often not pills, but, you know, infusions, complex injections.
So break that down. What makes something specialty besides just being expensive?
It's the complexity, the target, often the administration. We're seeing two main types really pushing this. First, you have biologics and their counterparts, biosimilars. Biologics are these complex drugs, often made from living cells for things like severe autoimmune diseases, cancers, rare conditions. Hugely effective.
So hugely expensive.
Hugely expensive. Now, the good news, or at least a counterbalance, is the rise of biosimilars. The original biologics usually get 12 years of market exclusivity. As those patents expire, we're seeing more cost-effective biosimilars entering the market.
And that's picking up steam. I remember seeing data on approvals.
Yes, definitely. 2024 saw 19 new biosimilars approved, a record for 1 year. And that trend is holding strong into 2025. So payers, employers, they're constantly having to adjust their formularies, their strategies to manage this dynamic between the expensive original biologics and the incoming biosimilars.
Okay, so biologics and biosimilars are one part. What's the other driver in specialty meds?
The really cutting edge and often highest cost area is cell and gene therapies, CGTs. We're seeing a record number of approvals here too in 2025. These are things like personalized cell therapies for specific blood cancers or incredibly sophisticated gene editing for rare genetic disorders.
The kind of stuff that sounds like science fiction, promising actual cures potentially, but the price tags are astronomical, right? Hundreds of thousands, even millions per patient.
Exactly. Transformative outcomes, potentially cures, yes, but attached to these massive price tags. And that creates enormous challenges, not just financially, but logistically for the whole health system.
Logistically? How so?
Well, think about it. Your average hospital isn't set up for this. We're talking personalized, small batch manufacturing, sometimes needing cryogenic storage, specialized infusion centers. The supply chain is complex and risky, and the whole reimbursement model is struggling to catch up. How do you pay $1 million up front for something that might offer a lifetime benefit? The industry is trying to innovate there, moving towards more automated, purpose-built manufacturing to scale up and maybe bring costs down eventually. But for 2026, the reality is the growing use of these super high-cost, high-impact therapies is a major factor pushing those employer cost projections towards, and sometimes past, that 10% mark we talked about.
Okay, so that's the innovation piece, expensive new tools. Now let's shift gears, because it's not just the cost per treatment, it's also the sheer number of people needing treatment, right? Let's talk chronic conditions and, well, who we are as a population.
Yeah, that's absolutely critical. Chronic conditions are sort of the steady, relentless base layer of all healthcare spending. The sources are really clear on this. Something like 90% of all U.S. health spending goes towards people with chronic and mental health conditions.
90%, wow.
Yeah. Heart disease, cancer, diabetes, arthritis, obesity. This is the bedrock of the cost problem. And just look at a couple of examples. Cardiovascular diseases. Estimates suggest they'll affect over 60% of older adults by 2050. The related costs are projected to hit $1.8 trillion. Even if you adjust for inflation, that's nearly a tripling of costs just for heart-related issues in the coming decades.
Which really points to a challenge in prevention, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It feels like the system is still mostly geared towards treating the crisis, managing the chronic illness, rather than stopping things like obesity before they start.
That's a huge part of it. Obesity, for example. More than 2 out of 5 U.S. adults have obesity now, and the link between obesity and other costly conditions like type 2 diabetes, sleep apnea, it's incredibly strong and expensive. Just the annual medical costs directly related to obesity are estimated near $173 billion. These are conditions that really flourish when prevention and lifestyle management fall short.
And this rise in chronic illness, it connects directly to the demographics, right?
Brian.
The fact that as a country, we're just getting older.
It's inescapable. The data is stark. Life expectancy keeps ticking up, projected to go from about 79 years now to over 82 by the 2050s. But at the same time, the birth rate hit a record low in 2024, fewer than 1.6 kids per woman.
So fewer young people, more older people.
Exactly. The result is this slow but steady rise in the average age of the population, and that has massive cost implications. Adults over 65 use healthcare way more often.
That much more.
Per person spending for the 65 plus group, it's about 5 times higher than for kids and almost 2.5 times higher than for working age adults. Mostly because they often have multiple chronic conditions that need managing more doctor visits, more hospital stays, more medications.
And that puts pressure not just on the cost side, but on the actual system capacity too, I imagine.
Okay.
More demand for doctors, nurses, long-term care. Which brings us to maybe the single most expensive chronic condition cost driver right now. Cancer.
Yes, that's a crucial one. The BGH data highlights cancer care as the number one driver of employer cost increases, and it has been for 4 years straight now.
4 years, and it's getting worse.
It seems to be. The prevalence, the number of diagnoses, is growing. And worryingly, we're seeing more diagnoses among younger working-age people too, which is obviously devastating personally, but also financially disruptive for employers and families. And the spending per case is rising because while we have these amazing innovative therapies, personalized medicine, immunotherapies, those CGTs we mentioned, they're inherently intensive and very, very expensive, often running into hundreds of thousands of dollars per patient. So more diagnoses combined with higher cost per diagnosis, it just creates this unavoidable surge in spending.
Okay, so we've covered the drugs, the demographics, the diseases. Now let's get into the underlying economics, the kind of invisible forces that affect everything. Even if we magically fixed chronic illness tomorrow, we'd still have issues like inflation and labor, right?
Absolutely. Let's tackle that inflation piece first, because it can be confusing. You look at the official medical care index, part of the CPI, the consumer price index, as of August 2025, it was up maybe 3.4%, which sounds okay, right? Not great, but manageable.
Yeah, exactly. So why are employers telling us they're seeing increases of 8%, 10%, sometimes even more? Where's the disconnect between that 3.4% and the budget reality?
It's a really important distinction. The CPI measures the price change for a fixed basket of medical goods and services. Like, the price of one specific procedure might go up 3.4%, but your employer's cost increase reflects total spending. That includes both price and utilization, how much people are actually using the healthcare system.
Ah, cool. So people are just using more services.
Far more. Because of everything we just discussed, the aging population, more chronic conditions needing management, and critically, the availability and use of these new, effective, but very expensive treatments like GLP-1s and CGTs. So even if the price of one doctor visit only went up 3.4%, if people in the plan are having, say, two more visits or procedures per year on average, the total spend can easily jump 8 or 10%. It's really a utilization surge layered on top of price inflation.
And that pressure, it's definitely being felt by individuals. I saw that West Health Gallup research. What was it? 11% of U.S. adults, nearly 29 million people, saying they can't afford or access the care they need right now. That's the highest since 2021. And a third of people feel like they're paying way too much for the quality they get.
That affordability crisis is real, and it ties directly into the final piece of this puzzle, the healthcare labor situation.
Right, the labor costs. Explain that connection for us. How does a nursing shortage end up affecting my health insurance premium next year?
It's pretty direct, actually. It comes down to supply and demand, but intensified by demographics. We have a well-documented shortage of key healthcare workers, nurses, physicians, technicians. There just aren't enough to meet the growing demand from that aging population needing more care.
And the existing workforce is getting older, too.
Exactly. You've got retirements draining experience from the system, and we're not training new people fast enough to replace them and meet the increased demand. So what happens?
Hospitals have to pay more.
They absolutely have to. To attract and retain the staff they need, they're spending way more on salaries, sign-on bonuses, travel nurses, overtime pay. Labor is usually the biggest single operating cost for hospitals and health systems. So when those labor costs spike, they have to pass that expense on.
In the form of higher charges for services.
Precisely. Higher charges passed on to the insurance plans, the employers who sponsor those plans, and ultimately down to the employees through premiums and cost sharing. It's a direct pass-through.
Okay. Wow. We've covered a lot of ground here, synthesizing a ton of information. Let's try to bring it all together for the listener. What are the key takeaways?
Right. So what does this all mean for you listening to this as you think about 2026 and beyond? Essentially, this accelerated cost increase, it's like a perfect storm. It's a collision of three really powerful, kind of unavoidable forces. First, you've got radical game-changing innovation. These transformative but incredibly high-cost therapies, the GLP-1s, the biologics, the CGTs, they offer outcomes we've only dreamed of, but they come with these multi-million dollar price tags, and the current system just isn't built to easily absorb that cost at scale.
Okay, innovation is driver one.
Second, demographic destiny, you could call it. The simple fact that the U.S. population is aging, combined with this ongoing crisis of chronic disease, means higher utilization is basically guaranteed. More people needing more complex long-term care.
Demographic inevitability. Got it.
And third, systemic strain. You've got general medical price inflation, sure, but layered on top of that is this critical labor shortage, forcing providers to pass along much higher operating costs. That pushes the total spend for employers way up, much faster than just the headline inflation rate.
And the sources make it clear. These costs aren't just absorbed by companies, they're shared. It hits the corporate bottom line, absolutely, but it also puts a huge strain on employees' wallets, on household budgets. So we started by talking about these incredible innovative therapies, GLP-1, CGTs that promise longer lives, better health. Amazing potential. But we also landed on this stark fact. Almost 29 million people in the U.S. right now can't afford even basic quality care. Understanding these drivers, this collision of forces, is crucial. But it does lead to a tougher question, something for you to really think about. We are undeniably entering an era of personalized, potentially miraculous medicine. But given the financial reality we've discussed, the structure of our system, this escalating crisis of basic affordability, how do we, as a society, make sure these incredible million-dollar innovations don't just widen the gap? How do we balance the promise of these breakthroughs with the urgent need to ensure everyone has access to even foundational healthcare in the years ahead?